DW Africa Link.
Great to have you with us. Hello and a very warm welcome to this broadcast. We are live right here in our studios in Bonn, Germany. My name is Jane Nyingi.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. We are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and of course through our partner radio stations across Africa. Coming up, as the world marks World Water Day, in Nigeria, one organization is helping people in the commercial capital Lagos and its environs have access to clean water. But how was it before?
I used to go like 3 streets to get drinking water. When you keep it in your room till the next day, you end up seeing some black things. There was no water, so that was the only source of water we could drink.
Also on the program, Guinea-Bissau's president, Josué Mário Vaz, has been telling DW that his country is not ready for any foreign interference in order to avoid a political stalemate.
One can already say Guinea-Bissau is a stable country. I am interested in an internal solution. This means that we should avoid interference from abroad.
We've got more of that coming up. And Turkey's President Tayyip Erdogan calls on the West to deal with Islamophobia following an attack on 2 mosques in New Zealand that left 50 people dead.
More to that story and others. Stay with us until the end. But first, here's World News in brief.
DW News.
I'm Shay Monarchy with DW News. At least 60 people died after 2 passenger buses crashed in a head-on collision in Ghana on Friday. Isaac Kaliji in Accra has more.
The crash occurred at 2 a.m. local time on Friday in a town called Kintampo in the Bono East region. Each bus had over 50 passengers on board. Dozens sustained injuries. Felicia J., a member of parliament for the region, provides details.
These 2 cars, one is going to the north, one was coming from the north, and then they crashed. And then the other car was burned because I assume that the driver was sleeping. Almost everybody on board was burned, and the other one too, the one didn't burn, but almost everybody was dead.
Road crashes are becoming a regular phenomenon in Ghana. Road safety officials have urged drivers to be extra vigilant to prevent such deaths.
The World Food Programme has begun delivering aid to flooded parts in Mozambique, where Cyclone Idai unleashed hurricane-force winds and rains last Friday, affecting more than 1.7 million people in the East African country and in neighboring Malawi and Zimbabwe. Margaret van der Velden, a World Food Programme Director of Emergencies, said they're doing everything they can to assist those in need.
We have deployed helicopters and a cargo plane, and we have about 1,700 metric tons of food on the trucks moving towards Mozambique and have identified more food in the region that we will moving towards the people in need in Mozambique.
Officials estimate that around 15,000 people have been stranded in floodwater. The confirmed death toll has surpassed 500. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. German prosecutors in Frankfurt have said 10 people have been detained on Friday on suspicion of planning deadly Islamist attacks. Prosecutors said the suspects, who range in age from 20 to 42, planned on killing as many people as possible. The main suspects have allegedly been linked to an Islamist Salafist community near the central German city of Frankfurt. The nationalities of the suspects have not yet been made public. European Union leaders have been given Britain a last chance to make an orderly exit from the EU, offering British Prime Minister Theresa May and the UK Parliament until April 12th to quit the bloc without a treaty or to come up with a new Brexit plan. The offer was made during an EU summit on Thursday. It comes ahead of a vote in the British Parliament next week, when Britain could decide to back the Prime Minister and depart on May 22nd. And finally, 23 Chadian soldiers have been killed by Boko Haram militants in southwestern Chad. Military officials said it is one of the deadliest attacks on the Chadian military by the jihadists. Boko Haram has killed more than 25,000 people during their 10-year-long insurgency in Nigeria and neighboring Niger and Chad. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
This is Africa Link program, and my name is Jane Nyingi.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. Now, as the world marks World Water Day in Nigeria, majority of residents in Lagos have no access to safe and clean water, despite being a coastal city. This means that residents have to depend on boreholes that have been drilled.
And this is because the government has failed to provide piped water, and that is why many people have also resorted to unsafe water. Sam Olukoya brings us the story of a community-driven initiative that is providing clean water in Lagos and its suburbs.
Ruth Etime housewife fetches water from a borehole in Ibafo at the outskirts of Lagos. In the absence of pipe-borne water in Lagos and its suburbs, boreholes like this are the main sources of clean water for many. Even then, so many people have no access to clean water. The borehole Etime is fetching water from was dug in her community by the non-governmental organization Hazy Health Initiative. The organization runs a clean water initiative. Etime says before the borehole was sunk, she faced a lot of problems getting potable water.
You know, I happen to live in a compound that has no water. You know, somebody that has children, you want to cook. Fetching water is just extraordinary work. I used to go like 3 streets to get drinking water. We buy it 20 naira per bucket. When you keep it in your room till the next day, you end up seeing some black things. There was no water, so that was the only source of water we could drink. So that makes us to fall sick.
Many people in Lagos and other parts of Nigeria are facing similar problems due to lack of clean water. Rhoda Robinson, executive director of Hazy Health Initiative, says her organization has provided potable water to over 40 communities within Lagos and the surrounding areas. This, she said, has positively affected the lives of the people.
Because they now have access to clean water, there has been a reduction in illness, waterborne disease transmission within the communities. So there has been an overall improvement in the health of the community, especially for women within the communities and children, because they are the most affected by waterborne diseases. One of the leading causes of childhood deaths under 5 is diarrhea.
The water projects consist of a borehole, an overhead tank, and an electric power generator to pump water into the tank. Once these are provided, the communities are supposed to run the projects on their own. Olalekan Olagbaju is a community leader in Ibafo. He says the community has been running the project by contributing money to carry out repairs and to pump the water without seeking any assistance from Hazy Health Initiative.
The thing got damaged. We didn't bother to call them that this happened. We were the one that put money together and fix it back. So whenever we need to see something that we need to be changed or any improvement that we see, we'll do it by ourselves. It's a community project, and the community are really benefiting from it. So when the situation arises, we'll call on people, and they will contribute to their quota. Now we, the community, whenever we want to pump, we'll contribute money to pump water for ourselves.
But these community-run water projects hardly go far enough in a situation where the government has failed to supply potable water to the generality of the people.
Sam Olukoya, they are reporting from Lagos in Nigeria. Isaac, and we've got a lot of comments on this on our Facebook page.
Yes, indeed. Ngozi Obi says the average Nigerian doesn't have clean water to drink. Our so-called politicians, all the money budgeted for development ends up in their pockets. Shame.
Thanks for that comment, Gonzi. Edwin Chebutin Gang says managing and conserving water resources is key to long-term good security.
Buhari Umaru Umaru, as he prefers to call himself, says, I just wish that the governments of the world would understand that the poor in every country just need water, a piece of land, roads, and electricity. We don't need their offices. We just need security. A good comment there, Jane.
And we have another worry here from Brett. She says there is rampant destruction of water resources in Zambia, especially streams where people are building right in the stream, causing water to dry out. So keep those comments flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Moving on, an emergency session on the Organization of Islamic Cooperation has been held in Istanbul. The meeting was called by Turkey in the wake of the attack on two mosques in New Zealand that left 50 people dead.
However, New Zealand's Deputy Prime Minister, who was present, had been expected to criticize Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan for screening video clips of the attack in his campaign rallies. More this story is Susan Holton.
At the meeting in Istanbul, New Zealand's Deputy Prime Minister and Foreign Minister Winston Peters said the gunman accused of killing 50 people in two mosques in Christchurch on March 15th would spend the rest of his life in isolation in prison.
This person will face the full force of the New Zealand law. He will spend the rest of his life in isolation in a New Zealand prison. But to ensure no stone is left unturned in his prosecution, our police have started the largest investigation in our history.
The Organisation of Islamic Cooperation urged all countries to refrain from statements or policies that associate Islam with terror and extremism. It also demanded that March the 15th, the day of the attack, should be marked as the International Day of Solidarity Against Islamophobia. President Erdogan urged Western media outlets and politicians to avoid marginalising Muslims. He is demanding more action against anti-Muslim sentiment.
If we don't show our reaction in a strong manner, the neo-Nazi virus will engulf the body even more. If we don't raise our voices, Western government will not disrupt their comfort.
The accused gunman, a self-avowed white supremacist from Australia, streamed live much of the attack and spread a manifesto on social media claiming it was an attack against Muslim invaders. Foreign Minister Peters said he did not discuss Erdogan's use of the footage with Turkey's foreign minister or the president, though it had been widely expected that he would. Peters said he did not see any sound purposes in raising the issue, adding that they'd received very assuring information from the Turkish presidency. Later on Friday, Erdogan again showed an excerpt of the video at an election rally in the central city of Konya.
Susan Holton there with that report. And on Twitter, I can see that he says New Zealand has totally schooled the world on how to deal with Islamophobia. Now, moving back to Africa, Guinea-Bissau's historic ruling party this week signed a deal to form a coalition government after failing just short of a majority in parliamentary elections last week.
In an exclusive interview with DW's Portuguese service, Bissau's President José Mário Vaz said he was ready to work with anyone for the sake of peace and stability in a country that has experienced more coups than any other in Africa. Take a listen.
One can already say Guinea-Bissau is a stable country. We have a party that has won the elections, a party that has won the most parliamentary seats. While this party does not have the absolute majority of the 102 seats in parliament, a sincere dialogue with the other political parties will hopefully give it a viable majority in parliament, so that I can say now that the country's stability can be ensured. I am a man who never gives up hope. I am sure that we will come to a political understanding in our country. I am interested in an internal solution. This means that we should avoid interference from abroad as much as possible. I do not want to deny that there are problems, but we Guineas have to sit down together and look for solutions. The country has many problems that need to be mastered, and the challenges do not get smaller.
That was Guinea-Bissau's President José Mário Vaz exclusively speaking to DW's Portuguese service.
And just to remind you, today is World Water Day, and in Nigeria there are a lot of problems in regards to water like many African countries, and we've got lots of comments. Mike Napo says the only good message from so-called people evil guys in the UN about this day, this particular day.
And in, you can also tell us whether you really have clean and safe water in your communities by going to our Facebook page, DW Africa. And in case, anyway, you don't have this clean and safe water, tell us what governments can do to provide it to their people. Welcome back to the program. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And my name is Jane Nyinge. We welcome all of those following us through our partner radio stations across the continent. Coming up in this part of the show, we will be hearing how Ghana is learning from Namibia to conserve and protect its wildlife.
Last year, one of our staff was shot dead by a poacher. Anybody that we arrest in the park, they are hunters, and hunters always move with weapons.
But first, to North Africa, where Morocco wants to grant Western Sahara autonomy, a region with rich fishing waters and phosphate deposits, which may also have oil and gas reserves. However, the Polisario Front, a Sahrawi rebel national liberation movement that aims to end the Moroccan presence in Western Sahara, rejects this.
Instead, the movement wants a referendum that offers the independence of Western Sahara as an option. For many years, Western Saharans have lived in a refugee camp and would like to return home without preconditions. Here is a report by Hugo Flautout Talon, presented by Abubakar Jallo.
Omar sat on a carpet in his father's tent. The 21-year-old was born in the refugee camp of Al-Sayed in the Algerian part of the Sahara. All around, there is only desert, no water, and farming is impossible.
It's not easy to live here because, like you see, the life is difficult. There is no future and many things. There is some difficulties for things that we eat, like food, like many things. Situation to help us. And some times clothes and things for study.
Al-Sayed is one of five camps in Algeria where Western Saharan refugees and their descendants live. Alone, it houses some 50,000 people in tents, mud shacks and brick houses. Omar lives here with his parents and five siblings. He attended school until he turned 18 and went on to an Algerian university, but that did not last long.
I have some difficulties about our life because I'm a height man in the family. So the family needs me to help them, take them money and many something like that. There is no hope. There is no hope.
People in the camps have tried to make the best out of their situation. They set up their own city quarter, communities and religions. Schooling, healthcare, and the distribution of relief supplies has to be organized. Yet, after more than four decades of conflict, hopelessness is spreading, Al-Sayed Governor Mariam Salek Hamda told DW. The food aid supply has declined, infant mortality is doubled that of Europe, and water is limited to 10 liters per day.
The youth is in doubt because in this situation, in which we are for more than 43 years, they see no light at the end of the tunnel. Since 1991, the young people born here see no solution on the horizon. With the standby situation of 27 years of no peace or war and doubt and mistrust of the UN, this situation arises in occupied areas. One hears daily about a mother, sister, or brother being kidnapped and abused. All this fosters a dissatisfaction that can lead to anything.
Some people in the camps make no secret of where this dissatisfaction can lead. Among them is Abdul Al-Hajj, who leads tours through the Museum of Resistance in the nearby Smara camp.
We are tired of waiting. We are fed up with the status quo. No one has made a move in 43 years. We have waited for more than 27 years for a resolution via the UN. We are a peace-loving people, but when nothing is resolved, we are prepared to take up arms.
It is these strains that representatives of the Polisario Front brought to the resumption of negotiations in Geneva on 21st March 2019. Lead negotiator is Horst Köhler, Germany's president from 2004 to 2010 and UN Special Envoy for Western Sahara since 2017. An offer from Morocco is already on the table. The kingdom wants to grant Western Sahara autonomy.
That report was Hugo Flotter-Talon and presented by Abakal Jalu. Now, another story that is being reported on worldwide is about the cyclone, the effects of the cyclone in Mozambique and Zimbabwe. Aid agencies are racing to prevent disease outbreaks amid the Mozambique floods that were brought by Cyclone Idai. That's according to the head of the UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, Henrietta Fore. She said, "We are running out of time. It is at a critical point here. And they're trying to avoid disease in both countries, Jen."
And over 145 bodies have been recovered so far following that cyclone.
Exactly. This is a story that is really sad. And it is expected that the death could rise beyond even the mark of 1,000, you know, lives. And we hope that the aid agencies go the rescue of the people affected there. Romeo Ajay says, "Didn't they see this coming? And if they did, why did they do to evacuate their people or help them?" Well, Romeo Ajay, just to let you know that alert systems in Africa are not really in place. And especially that was the first time that a kind of cyclone that took place in Mozambique happened.
So keep talking to us on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Moving on, Ghana is tapping into the Namibian knowledge to manage its wildlife resources. On this mission, a team of trainers from the European Union have just wrapped up a special training for staff of Wildlife Division of the Forestry Commission in Tamale.
By the training, the officers can be able to use special cameras to track the movement of the animals and take stock of them as part of an animal census for the Mole National Park, the largest sanctuary in Ghana. They want communities to see the animals as cohabitants than mere meat. But the insatiable desire for bush meat in Ghana is already placing less confidence in the initiative. Maxwell Sook reports.
On a safari ride through the park, bamboos, warthogs, and waterbugs are among the mammals we saw hiding under trees to protect themselves from the scorching sun. The Wildlife Division of Ghana's Forestry Commission is tapping into the expertise of Bushkai's aerial photography, a Namibian-owned company specializing in aerial surveys and large game reserves and national parks, and the University of Namibia to help in the conservation of the Mole National Park. The park covers an area of 4,777 square kilometers and contains diverse species of mammals, birds, and flora, and it can only take effective protection of the park to safeguard the sanctuary, especially when Ghanaians have insatiable desire for bushmeat. Deputy Chief Executive of the Forestry Commission, John Aluti, says authority will do anything to counter threats by encroachers and poachers.
The species have the opportunity to breed and multiply in their natural habitats and continue to do so in the long term. The park has one of the largest breeding herds of elephants in West Africa. It is therefore considered by the International Union for Conservation of Nature, IUCN, as one of the elephant hotspots for conservation of the globally threatened elephant populations.
The European Union is committing nearly €150,000 to conduct the census and train the personnel at the park. The results of the survey will be published in August this year. Mr. Robert Shilero, team leader, infrastructure and sustainable development from the EU, said the exercise will contribute to a clear definition and management of the park.
The EU considers that this small project we are here today witness can be the kick of a major sustainable strategy for the preservation of wildlife in the northern region, in Ghana, in the new savanna region, and contribute to its economic development.
The Mole National Park attracts about 17,000 visitors annually, according to management, the second highest tourist destination in Ghana after the slave castles in the capital, Accra. This is why efforts are being made to get the park listed into the UNESCO World Heritage Site after previous attempts were unsuccessful. But protecting the park remains a daunting task for park rangers like Yebua Jacob.
See, last year, one of our staff was shot dead by a poacher whilst he's on patrols. We were unable to arrest the suspect. So he's dead and dead forever. Recently, Bia Conservation Area, about last week, another staff was killed by a poacher. And anybody that we arrest in the park they are hunters, and hunters always move with weapons.
Poaching and wildfire remains key threats to the sanctuary. Officials say lions are the most endangered species in this park, obviously for not poaching reasons alone, but because of their low birth rate. But to further demonstrate commitment to protecting wildlife and the vegetation, government has criminalized logging of rosewood throughout northern Ghana.
Maxwell Sook with that report.
Talking Sport.
Now to your sports. The international friendly match between Germany and Serbia ended in 1-1 draw. And of course, there was mixed reactions from fans on the team's performance.
And yes, many German fans, including Nadine, our program assistant there, Berghauser, hoped and wished that, you know, Germany beats Serbia. But anyway, they were shocked. And probably on Sunday, Germany will pull it off with the Holland. Now, to delve into that match, we are now joined by DW Sports editor Davis van Opdop.
It was an interesting game because, like you said, they were trying to experiment with something different. Said they're trying to incorporate a lot of young players into their team. Their defense had a lot of young players. There was one, Lucas Klostermann, who was making his debut, and another, his teammate from RB Leipzig on the other side, Marcel Hastenbeck, had only made one international cap. So Löw, with a new year after a very tough 2018, was definitely trying to change things up a bit, and it didn't necessarily, not everything worked, but again, Serbia also a very good team, so to have a draw against a World Cup opponent is, from where they came from last year, that's progress.
And still on that particular game, police are now investigating reports of racist comments made by fans during that friendly against Serbia. What more can you tell us about this incident?
Yeah, there was an expert for RAN in Germany, which is a sports broadcaster. He was at the game privately and had posted a video on yesterday. Mm. It was about a 5-minute Facebook Live where he explained that there was racist chants whenever Leroy Sané and Ilkay Gundogan were on the ball. And he said what really baffled him the most was the fact that nobody around him in the section was saying anything. And he got up and said something and asked them if they were neo-Nazis and stuff. But he was with his family, so he wasn't really in a position to go to a steward or go to police to say anything. But he was very emotional in the video. And then after that, Wolfsburg police announced that they were going to look into racist chants at the game. And today, the three people that were the subject of that video turned themselves into police.
Okay. Okay, now let's talk about the Euro qualifiers. The Dutch and Belgians started off well with wins against Belarus and Russia, respectively. And on Sunday, Germany will play against the Netherlands. What should we expect?
Oh, I'm expecting a great game. I mean, we saw, obviously, the Netherlands put up a real good fight against Germany in the Nations League. Didn't lose either one of those matches. They won the first in Germany and then got a 2-2 draw in Amsterdam in November. But they said themselves that they're expecting a different Germany team this time around. And I think that in the Nations League, Germany were a little bit guilty of taking the Netherlands for granted. The Netherlands hadn't made a major tournament in 4 years. This is obviously a new Netherlands team, but this is also could be an opportunity for Germany to show that they're a different team and that they're recovered from their really tough 2018.
I was speaking to Davis van Opdop from DW Sports Desk. Now, before we quickly leave you, here's another story that we'd like to bring to your attention. The U.S. has placed sanctions on three senior Congolese electoral officials. Washington accuses the trio of corruption and obstructing the December election, which was won by opposition leader Felix Tshisekedi. We asked you whether the U.S. meddled in Congo's internal affairs, Jen.
And Faraday Udo says if France, Britain, Germany, China, Russia do the same by placing sanctions, most African leaders would change their character for better governance.
Modi Tunkara says, shame on Mr. Trump, biggest, you know, thief in history. How did you win? I mean, he's putting question to them, yeah.
That's your comment, Mondi. We have Kingsley Uzuma who says, Nigeria election with Army, Navy, Air Force, road safety, police, all that. Do you expect it to be? Free and fair.
Yeah. Anyway, there we come to the end of the show.
And on behalf of the whole team here in Bonn, Germany, my name is Jane Nyinge.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. Bye for now.
DW. Made for Minds.